I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and is this the first movie we're reviewing that could have been a podcast? Joining me today is Devendra Hardwar.
Definitely not the first.
Joining me today is Devendra Hardwar.
If Hugh Grant invited me in for Blueberry Pie, I would just ask, what would Paddington do?
And Jeff Cannata.
Last week, we reviewed the movie Here. I'm so excited that this week we're reviewing what must be its sequel, Here Tick.
That's how you title sequels, yes.
Those are vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast we're going to be reviewing Heretic, new horror film out from A24 starring Hugh Grant. Should be a fun conversation. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at filmcast@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms. We're on YouTube. We're on Instagram at The Filmcast Pod. We're on TikTok at The Filmcast. And of course, if you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/filmpodcast is how you can do that. Today, we're going to be discussing just our reactions to stuff that happened over the course of the last week. We got a bunch of film news to get out to you folks. And then we are going to be moving into some what we've been watching. So that is what is on deck for today. I do want to issue a mea culpa right off the top of the podcast, though. And that is that we have been planning to play some cool voicemails during our 800th episode. And I had meticulously timed that episode to take place for our Gladiator review, which I thought was
way back
happen.
In episode one. He meticulously timed it out.
I thought that episode was going to happen for our Gladiator review next week. I came to a horrifying realization, which is that the date that I thought that Gladiator 2 was going to come out, November 15th, it's actually the date that Gladiator 2 is going to come out in the United Kingdom. Thanks, Brexit. And Gladiator 2 is not going to come out in the US until, I believe, November 22nd. And so that means we have a 1 week gap between now and our what I wanted to be our 800th episode. So next week on the podcast, saying it right now, it's not going to be our 800th episode. It's going to be
a filler episode.
It's going to be a filler episode. It's going to be a bonus episode. And in that episode, we are going to be rewatching the 2000 Ridley Scott film Gladiator.
Is it the 800th time we've done an episode? Shut up.
Who knows?
But what's important, Jeff, is it's not going to have the number 800 in front of it.
That's right.
Because we say so.
We've decided.
Yeah. Because the rules don't matter. So, but yes, our 800th episode will be our Gladiator 2 episode in a couple weeks. And next week is going to be a bonus episode where we discuss Gladiator 1. Now, you might say, well, how is the bonus episode going to be different? It's not. It's going to be exactly the same as normal episode.
It's going to be exactly the same, except no number.
Except no number. at the top
That's
of
the biggest and the difference.
Movie is 24 years old. So
yes, yeah, yes. So anyway, just something to look forward to next week. Gladiator 1, and then that'll be a fun chat because I know Jeff has famously terrible opinion on that movie, and yes, we're going to be true. Then we're going to be then true. Discussing that, and then moving on into Gladiator 2 in a couple weeks, where we'll play some of your voicemails and messages. We really appreciate you sending those in to /filmcast@gmail.com. There's still time, 1 to 2 minutes. Tell us what the podcast means to you, or memories you have had with the podcast. /filmcast@gmail.com. Send your voicemails there for episode 800 in a couple weeks when we review Gladiator 2. All right. Lots to discuss about stuff that's happening in the world this week. And this is the first episode that we have recorded since the results of the 2024 U.S. presidential election were made known to us. We're not going to spend that much time talking about it. This isn't a politics podcast, but I am curious what my co-hosts and friends think about what has happened, how they're reacting to what has happened. And so, yeah, I mean, Jeff, when, as we enter this time period, you know, the thing that I am thinking about is we recorded on the After Dark a few weeks and, talking about our thoughts on this, and something you said that it sticks in my mind. Stuff that Jeff Cannata says sticks in my mind. Most of it's good. Some of it's really annoying, but you know, most of it's good. And you said something that is just like, you know, I don't want my kids to have to look at this guy's picture when they go to the library, right? Like that. Yep. You don't want this guy to be like the role model for what people think you should be like and behave like in the United States. Like I'm curious now that Donald Trump is going to seemingly at this moment, as we're recording this, seemingly going to be the next president of the U.S. Like,
who knows what could happen?
Who knows what
anything
could happen? Anything could happen
at this point.
But how you're feeling about that situation?
Well, what stage of grief am I in? It was devastating. It's been a devastating week. I am very fortunate. Just serendipity dictated that a long planned weekend retreat with my friends, the TRS guys, Dan and Alex, and a couple of other my buddies that we get together. We try to do it twice a year. We didn't do it. It's been a year since we met up, but we all go. One of my friends has a family Airbnb place that they own in Palm Springs, California. And we go there periodically and just kind of hunker down and eat junk food and play board games for 3 days.
That sounds amazing.
It's the best. It's the best. And it just happened to be scheduled for this last weekend. It had been scheduled that way for almost a year. And it turned out to be the absolute savior for me and my sanity, because I got to just go and turn off. And like, I didn't look, we talked about it a little bit while we were there, but it was mostly just hanging with friends and reminding yourself that there's joy and there's laughter and there's good people and there's, you know, these connections are what's important. And I, it meant a lot to me, and it was a salve for my soul. But yeah, that is honestly among many, many horrible outcomes and paths toward the country getting much worse, in my opinion. One of the worst for me as a parent of an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old is realizing my kids are going to become aware of the world in new ways over the next 4 years. And that is the role model, a role model of selfishness and cruelty and craven self-interest and greed and all those things. And not just at the top, but every single person in that cabinet, every single person that's going to be associated with that government is going to be chosen for those qualities, like selected for those qualities. Those are going to be the qualities that are rewarded. And I got to tell you guys, I married a very good woman, as I think all three of us are fortunate to be able to say. And as she and I processed the results and dealt with our grief and shock and sadness, you know, I retreated. I felt very numb. I felt very empty, and I did not have the same reaction I had in 2016. I just felt it just was so decisive and so clear that the country had chosen this that I felt very hopeless.
Right. I think in 2016, you could rationalize it away, right? You could say, yes. Oh, people didn't know what he would be like.
That's
right. he lost the popular vote. Oh,
that's right.
Like people really didn't like Hillary Clinton and they wanted to take a chance on something, you know, like they'll roll the dice. Now it is extremely clear. We've had 8-9 years to understand
who
Donald Trump is.
Could not be more
clear
and could not be more selected like that.
Yeah.
But so I, you know, I went through a real dark sort of withdrawing and depression. And my wife did the same. And I think we had a real dark couple of days. But I have to tell you, she has channeled that energy into something positive. And she got on the phone and online and on text, started texting the people in our area. And she is, I'm going to have a hard time saying this without getting emotional. She has decided to start a kindness club for all the young boys in our neighborhood to teach them how to be young men. And we're going to start with my son's age and his contemporaries, the 8-year-olds. And it's not going to be just for boys. It'll be for any kid that wants to, any parent that wants to put, you know, have their kid part of it. But she's organizing this with the parents and is going to turn this into something to really try to change the tide of what kinds of behaviors are expected and rewarded, and just, you know, start locally and start in our own community and with our own neighbors and our own friends. And there's so much, the reaction that she's gotten from proposing this to her friends, other moms and dads in our neighborhood, is so heartening. Because people want this, want there to be some structure in place to support and reinforce kindness and selflessness and empathy and goodness. And I was just so inspired by my wife and how she handled it and how she's using that negative energy and sort of trying to turn lemons into lemonade. And so anyway, I'm just proud of her, and I'm still in a real dark place, but it's like, it's awesome to see how people who are stronger than I are dealing with this moment.
That's great.
Yeah. That's lovely, Jeff. And I think, you know, something my wife is saying a lot right now is in-person local community is going to become real important. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the next few years, like the things that we relied on government for, will likely, we will not be able to rely on them as anymore. And so if stuff happens, like having somebody who knows what your name is and how to reach you and vice versa, it's going to be really important over the course of the next few years. Given your hardware, curious how you're feeling about things.
I mean, not great, Dave. You know, I think a lot of us
don't say.
A lot of us are kind of feeling that way. I'll tell you guys this, because I had to explain what happened in the election to my daughter Sophia, who's 6 years old, and she was all in on Kamala. Like, she really liked her story, and she was really excited to have Kamala be president. So I had to tell her that Kamala lost, the other guy won, and I've not like said much anti-Trump stuff to her, but she's heard sound clips and stuff from him. And her reaction back then was like, why, what? He is a presidential candidate. Like, that guy should be out of this country. She specifically said he should be banned. But when I told her Kamala lost, she's like, okay, I guess I'll have to do it. Just like that.
She's like Thanos in the post credits. Okay, I'll do it myself.
And that is a thing I've heard from a lot of her friends in this neighborhood too. Like, we have a bunch of family friends or other families that we know around, and their little girls are all saying like, well, this is disappointing, but clearly something has to be done. And I kind of love that spirit. I do love the spirit of thinking more locally and thinking more about how we could help each other, because it's kind of what we're going to have to do over the next 4 years. It's going to be tough, guys. And I understand all the impulses to leave, the impulse to just fully enclose yourself in your own comfort and your own house and everything. But I think more than anything, it shows us that we kind of have to come together to withstand whatever this is. There are so many reasons to think about like why this happened. And I'm still mulling that over. Like, I find it just ridiculous. It says something about the American people, says something about the country we live in and what it actually is. On the one hand, I'm actually not that surprised. I wasn't too surprised when he won the first time. Actually, not that surprised now. And there are a lot of things we could poke holes into. All we can do is kind of hunker down, try to figure out how we survive together. If anybody's looking like for a guiding light or anything, there was a great article I read by Rebecca Solnit that has been shared around. It's called "Authoritarians Like Trump Love, Fear, Defeatism, and Surrender. Do Not Give Them What They Want." It is a really good blueprint in terms of processing the feelings we have, but also figuring out what lies ahead, because it's going to be tough, but we can't let that fully defeat us, because that's exactly what they want. And if we're going to ever recover as a country, find a better way forward, it's going to be by doing some work together and trying to support each other. So that's where I am.
I think those are lovely sentiments you guys have shared. I almost don't want to say anything, because it's just like, it's so, it's actually very, you know, edifying what you guys are saying. I'll just say, you know, I think you're right, Devendra. Something my wife has said, like, my wife has spent the last 5 weeks.
Bless her. Yeah.
Living out of a hotel in Wisconsin, canvassing for Kamala Harris. And something that she said after the election is like, that it doesn't really, that for her, the work that needs to be done today is the same as the work that needed to be done before the election, you know, like, and it will be harder, and it will, but it's not like, I don't think she perceives it as an epochal shift, like many people are thinking, that just like, it's part of a continuum of the country vacillating back and forth and making good decisions and bad decisions. And the work that needed to be done still needs to be done. But yeah, I am really, I'll say just, I'm very afraid of what is to come. I think I literally don't know how bad it's going to get. And maybe we'll look back at this time and say, haha, remember when we thought it was going to get really bad? I don't think that's going to happen, though.
It was pretty bad the first time.
It was pretty bad the first time.
Now he is more organized and, yeah, has a more loyal group of people around him. So,
yeah. So I think it's, I think there will be a lot of suffering. And I feel a lot of grief and sadness and mourning over that. We must press on. So anyway,
you know, a song that started playing while I was driving my kid to school was "Optimistic" by Radiohead, of all bands. One of their few songs that is very much, I think, not super cynical and not like sad about the world. But the key line is, "You can try the best you can. You can try the best you can. The best you can is good enough." And I think we all tried. I think a lot of people tried to get Kamala, you know, Harris elected, and it just wasn't enough, but we will keep going. Yeah.
All right. Those are some thoughts on the election. I will probably have further discussions about this in like the After Dark and other places and other times. I know people were probably expecting to hear us react to it. So just wanted to let you know, that is where we are at. That's what we are thinking right now. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with some more lighthearted material after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Uncommon Goods. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, people. Sound the alarms. Good news is Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow, they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Let me give you an example of one of the coolest things that I've seen on Uncommon Goods. And it's perfect for right now. Right before we get to December 1st, Uncommon Goods has the Retro Games Coding Advent Calendar. That's right. You can game your way through the holiday countdown with this calendar that gives you all the tools to build a new electronic challenge every single day. It's only $30. It's every single door of the advent calendar contains a different electronic component to build a circuit-based game. And there's 24 of them. Diagram instructions included. It's amazing. That's the kind of stuff you'll find on Uncommon Goods. That's the kind of stuff you're not going to find anywhere else. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so you're going to want to shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize, from holiday host and hostess gifts to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone, from book lovers to diehard sports fans. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you could find just anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/filmcast. That's uncommongoods.com/filmcast for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
All right. Now that we've talked about the serious stuff, let's talk about some extremely silly pedantic shit, which is our specialty. I want to start with this topic. As we're recording this, earlier today, Tom Cruise posted the final trailer for Mission Impossible 8, including a new title.
Isn't that the first trailer? We didn't get a trailer before.
Sorry,
yeah, I don't think it's the final trailer.
Yeah. Sorry. I meant to say the first trailer for the final mission. For the final Mission Impossible. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
I apologize. There's a new name. You know, we originally thought it was going to be Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2. The new name of Mission Impossible 8 is now Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning. And my reaction to this is Marlon Brando in The Godfather standing over his dead son and saying, look at how they massacred my boy. I think this is a terrible title. Because now what, so I think here's my perception of what has happened, right? They made this movie called Dead Reckoning Part One. They realized that titling anything Part One is bad because people won't go see an incomplete movie. And so now they're like, okay, well, let's not do this Dead Reckoning Part Two. That's a lame title. So I think they basically has changed Dead Reckoning Part One's title to just Dead Reckoning. And now the next movie is called The Final Reckoning. Well, the problem with that is Dead Reckoning is a reference to like a submarine, like a nautical term. And so there's like this kind of double entendre that you got to have of like, oh, it's that, but it's also Reckoning sounds cool. And now you have this thing called The Final Reckoning. That means the seventh and eighth movie are going to be titled Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning and then Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning. Jeff Cannata, is that not too many reckonings?
Many reckonings!
Well, at least The Final Reckoning didn't come first.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
Do you agree? Can I get an amen here?
It bothers me. Here's what I would like as restitution. We retroactively go back and change all the Mission Impossible titles to Reckonings. The first Reckoning. Reckoning again. Second Reckoning Redux.
Too fast, too Reckoning.
That's right. Still Reckoning.
Yeah.
I reckon we're Reckoning.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of them. They have to do it. It's only right. The original Reckoning. Reckoning more.
I have to say, I have not watched the entire thing because I'm trying to, like, they've spoiled the hell out of, you know, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 in those
trailers. I'm going to watch this trailer.
I watched parts of the trailer, and I have to say, they put together a good trailer, and the music for the trailer is awesome. It's a good piece of marketing, as usual.
We need whatever we can get to survive, folks. Take it all.
Mission Impossible Rogue Reckoning.
Ooh.
Mission Impossible Ghost Reckoning. Mission Impossible, okay. Fallout Reckoning.
You're still on this show. I like how Matt Goldberg put it this morning on Threads. He said, I need this movie to be good, like fix my entire life good.
Yeah, please.
Basically. Please.
So say we all.
Okay, but Devinder, you're fine with the Final Reckoning as the title.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's better than Dead Terrible. Reckoning Part 2, and I think the whole parts part of all these titles was a mistake. We saw that with Fast and Furious as well, and it's just not exciting. It's telling you the story is incomplete, and Final Reckoning feels good. Feels good.
The thing about that that's so genius, mm-hmm. I have to say, is look at the marketing for Wicked. Like, the marketing for Wicked is incredible. It's incredible because, first of all, you would not know that that movie is a musical from any of the trailers, even though it's one of the best-known musicals of the most modern era.
I'm pretty sure people know of how well they've concealed the basic premise of the movie.
100%, Jeff. Point number two, everyone knows John Chu announced there is going to be a part two of Wicked that is going to theoretically come out next year.
Wickeder.
Is it hinted at this is a first half of a movie? This is part one. Maybe it's going to be
this is not the entire Wicked story. It's not a very long story.
No, the second one's going to be called The Final Wickening.
I think the movie is I think Wicked the musical is like 2 hours and 40 minutes, and this movie is like 2 hours and like 20 minutes or something. You know, like, so I don't even know why they needed two movies.
Yeah, you have time to tell that whole story. Yeah. It's not a very complicated story.
They tell it on stage pretty well. I said The Final Wickening, guys. Nothing for that. That was good. That was good.
For next year's
The second Wicked movie. Yeah, is the final Wicked.
That's Wicked. Good.
I mean, it has to be a John Wick crossover. I think that's what we really need. Wicked 2, X John Wick.
I just feel like for Mission Impossible, The Final Mission was right there. Right?
Double titles. Come on.
It's impossible the final title. Mission.
No.
I agree.
Now I'm going to put my foot down. No.
Devinder would rather have The Final Reckoning than... Okay,
but I think The Final Reckoning is a good title if you never did Dead Reckoning.
I agree. If there's no previous Reckonings, you're good with The Final Reckoning. Like, oh, yes, that's fine. I mean, also, I'm just going to put this out there, though, Jeff. Kind of redundant. Like... Mm-hmm. We do a lot of writing at my job, and one of the key elements of writing is like eliminate any unnecessary words.
Yes.
You don't need to have final in there. You could just call it The Reckoning. That'd be good enough. But they couldn't call this The Reckoning because that would be stupid. They just called the last movie Dead Reckoning.
It requires final because there is another Reckoning.
There is another Reckoning. I agree.
There are other words.
You just had a Reckoning of the Dead variety.
Yeah.
Now you need a reckoning of the final variety.
That's right.
Should have been called Final Countdown and just set it the entire movie to the song. Right.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. That I could
the
deal
final
with.
What do you do in a Mission Impossible title? Count down those numbers. Count down to the timer.
The
right?
problem Something is that that on. Evokes that song that everybody will be humming as they walk
I
in.
I know.
The
yes. Music. As it should. And now we'll get a full orchestral rendition of it. Yes.
I will also say The Final Reckoning does seem to heavily imply that this will be Tom Cruise's last Mission Impossible movie, which is worth noting just because this has been a part of his life for decades now. There's times in our lives when we thought this would be the last Mission Impossible, and it wasn't. And now it really feels like this is the end. So,
he is 62 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I think at this point he is like, I need a movie where I just sit. what does Ving Rhames do? Like, Yeah.
I don't know. I think the spirit is willing, but the body is weak in his situation. You know, mm-hmm.
That leaves it open for the next movie, The Stationary Reckoning.
Mission possible. Very possible at a desk.
Yeah. Anyway, the movie's going to come out in, I think, May of 2025. So
sure, bring it on.
I think this is usually like a July movie, if I'm not mistaken, right? Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1 was released in July of 2023. A whole world of difference ago. And then Fallout, when did that come out? That came out in 2018 in July as well. So May is actually like quite a bump up in terms of the box office calendar. But
maybe they're feeling like because Dead Reckoning Part 1 did not do as well, I think, as they wanted, they will want to give it a little extra room away from
more time in the summer movie wager, basically, to make up its
more time its in IMAX, goddammit. Yeah.
All right. Here's another thing that happened this week. Tony Todd has passed away.
Man.
Very, very sad. Tony Todd, one of the great actors of our time. And obviously the original Candyman that like I grew up with, and you know that he defined that character for
he will
a
forever
generation.
Be Candyman. Yeah, yeah.
That's probably
that's what
one of
put,
his most
made
iconic
him a mainstay in yeah. horror movies too. Yeah,
yeah. But he was also great in Final Destination.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like I loved him in the Final Destination movies, and I gotta say, guys, I mean, I'm. Let me ask you guys: do you have any like? Favorite Tony Todd movies or performances, Devendra, Jeff? If not, I will,
think it is Candyman. I think Candyman is one of those movies where we really need to like look at how good that movie was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, horror fans, understand it. And also people who grew up in cities, like inner city kids, I know, love that movie because it was the rare horror movie set in very much an inner city, set in the projects in Chicago. And it told a story that not many other movies were telling, certainly not horror movies. So I think a lot of people just have an affinity to it. That is a beautiful movie, has an incredible score. I think like, yeah, we should really just acknowledge like how great that original movie is. So I'm hoping people do that.
Have you guys seen The Man from Earth?
Yeah.
Man from Earth is very much a Jeff movie. It's basically like people sitting in a room, but talking, but he's in that. And it is a very cool sci-fi premise. I think a kind of a underappreciated movie. So, yeah, I mean, Candyman was never my thing, but I certainly like always enjoyed seeing this guy pop up and stuff. You know, he's done a lot of work over the years, and you always pop up and you're like, oh yeah, that guy's going to be solid. He always brought it, and it's sad to see him pass.
He has this incredible gravelly voice, has a lot of texture to it. But guys, I'm going to tell you about my favorite Tony Todd, not even performance, Tony Todd moment. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the Michael Bay film, The Rock, he plays one of General Hummel's soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a moment when he is confronting Nicolas Cage, who is holding a huge missile full of VX gas. And they're fighting. And then Tony Todd accidentally stands in front of a missile. And Nicolas Cage is realizing, hey, I can freaking launch this guy out of the building. And this scene happens where Nicolas Cage talking to Tony Todd in the Michael Bay movie, The Rock.
I think we got started off on the wrong foot. Stan Goodspeed, FBI. Let's talk music. Do you like the Elton John song Rocket Man?
I don't like soft ass shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I only bring it up because it's you. You're the Rocket Man.
Okay.
I don't like soft ass shit.
That scene is incredible. First of all, the line, I don't like soft ass shit, that has stuck in my mind for so long. The whole scene is incredible because the pun, the one liner, you're the Rocket Man. Why would he even bring up Rocket Man at that time?
Taking time to set up that reference. Yeah.
The thing that I love, Tony Todd is holding a knife and he's about to cut Nicolas Cage in that scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I love is in the middle of them trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage, hey, I think we got off on the wrong foot. Do you like the Elton John song Rocket Man? And Tony Todd actually like thinks for a second.
He takes the question seriously.
He's like, it doesn't matter that we're about to execute a terrorist attack. It doesn't matter that you and I are literally about to kill each other.
Yeah.
I'm going to address your inquiry seriously, sir. And I don't like soft ass shit.
Yeah.
FYI, like how dare you even think that?
Before I send you to your grave.
I'm offended you would think.
That's
that
right.
I would like Rocket Man. And I'm going to express that offense by saying, I don't like soft ass shit.
Man.
Anyway.
What a loss. What a loss for us all.
If you were fighting someone, the henchman, would you like stop to talk about your musical taste? Like that's why that movie.
I would probably make it a little punchier, but the '90s were a weird time where Nicolas Cage could just do whatever he wants, right?
Like
that's right.
That also was the era of Schwarzenegger having all the good punchlines, but you know, it was more propulsive. Didn't require setup. Didn't require a whole joke framework. You know, man, I'm gonna miss Tony Todd so much.
Shit.
Soft ass shit.
Just incredible line, incredible delivery. It's...
I need to use that for movies sometimes. Should have used it last week for Robert Zemeckis' Here. Yeah. Soft ass shit. Yeah.
What did you think of Robert Zemeckis' Here?
I don't like soft ass shit.
All right, moving on.
Oh, man.
That could be the way we honor Tony Todd, is by quoting, I don't like soft ass shit.
It will
shit,
be
whatever.
A thing forever, forever now.
All right. R.I.P. Tony Todd. Amazing contributions to popular culture. All right. Final story. This is actually probably the biggest one. Simon Kinberg to write and produce new trilogy for a new Star Wars trilogy for Lucasfilm.
Sure.
This is from the Hollywood Report.
Sure. Whatever.
Sure. Sure.
I like,
is.
I like how
sure
we've gone is. Down the line from like names that people are excited about to Simon Kinberg. Remember him? He did X-Men movies. He did a bunch
also,
of Marvel movies, right?
How many trilogies have we not gotten?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's the Rian Johnson trilogy. Yeah. There's the David Benioff and D.B. Weiss trilogy.
That's right. Yeah.
You know? So, but guys, I think they might be serious this time. They might be serious this time. So here's the story. Simon
Kinberg. How about one movie? Can we start with one movie?
Let's start with one good movie.
It does feel like they're putting the cart before the horse when they announce the trilogy.
I mean, honestly... I'm being snarky, but I do appreciate starting a 3-movie arc knowing you're doing 3 movies as opposed to what happened last time.
Every trilogy announcement has been an effort to get away from what happened last time, basically.
Yeah.
Here's the story. Simon Kinberg is heading into hyperspace, signing an expansive deal to write and produce a Star Wars feature trilogy. Kinberg would spearhead the launching of a new saga in the beloved galaxy far, far away, and will write scripts for what Lucasfilm hopes would chart a brand new path forward for the sci-fi space opera universe. Kathleen Kennedy will produce the new trilogy. The new story is not meant to be a continuation of a Skywalker saga. The intent here is to have brand new characters and a new story and not have it be a continuation, sources tell The Hollywood Reporter, although that does not mean that some characters could not or would not pop up. Kinberg has strong Star Wars ties. He co-created the animated series Star Wars Rebels with Dave Filoni, as well as Carrie Beck, which ran from 2014-2018. He also helped to relaunch Star Wars after Disney bought Lucasfilm, acting as a consultant on 2015's The Force Awakens. He had a hand in the Fox X-Men movies, being one of the producers of Logan and the first 2 Deadpool movies, among many other creative duties.
He directed Dark Phoenix.
Yes,
and
he
also
directed Dark Phoenix.
Wrote a bunch of the X-Men movies.
He is about to go into production on Edgar Wright's The Running Man for Paramount.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Great cast in that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people shitting on this choice online, and I actually think it's a bit unfair. You know, Kinberg has had some bad movies recently, but he has also been instrumental in creating some really great comic book films.
He makes franchise, like he helps build franchises, and I think that's what they're going for. And I'm sure you're going to say this, Dave, the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes can do no wrong. He brought Sherlock Holmes to the world.
Oh, you mean the guy who made the movies that were far superior to that dog shit BBC series with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Wow.
Wow.
Dave chose violence.
I mean, there are enough bad episodes of that show to be like, yes, sure, fair. Yeah.
I also
wrote Jumper, this guy.
Okay. Not every movie is a hit, okay?
But, yes. I like Jumper for.
Yeah,
I like
too.
Jumper. Me too. That's fine.
Cool jumping effects.
Yeah.
My honest reaction to this news is wake me up when it's on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because at this point with Star Wars trilogies, I believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all great to have good intentions, but the road to these movies getting on the screen has been so turbulent and unpredictable. It's like, okay, yeah, he's working on it. Okay. Let me know when it actually is, when we got, you know, a release date.
Yeah. I usually don't believe in things until I see the trailer, because then it's like, oh, like, and even then sometimes stuff can be canceled, you know, but like, that's like a pretty certain thing. But anyway, Devendra, are you excited about this?
I mean, listen, I like the X-Men movies, you know, or at least a bunch of them. And he was responsible for not the best ones. So I don't know. I think they want to get a thing. They just want to let's start a franchise and let's see what happens. But I'm not expecting anything mind blowing. And also, like, yeah, I still feel bitter about we got some good Star Wars and people just ignored it or thought it was bad. So whatever. You want slop? You want slop, Star Wars fans? Here it is. Incoming.
He did write X-Men Days of Future Past, which
yes,
I really like, despite what some people have to say about it. I really like the movie. He was also theoretically one of the creative minds behind the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
He has a credit on that. Like, he was the person when the story is like when Bryan Singer was probably too wasted during some shooting days too. Like, he was the one shooting a lot of the X-Men movies as well.
He's been great on the Jeff Goldsmith Q&A podcast. Like, he comes across, in my opinion, as a very thoughtful person. Hasn't always made the greatest films, but anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with this franchise if this series ever happens as Jeff Cannata.
Maybe we haven't seen him like fully have creative control over something, you know, because he was always working within franchises and he's not a big name, but maybe now it's like
he might still not though.
Yeah, he still won't. But you'd be like, okay, here is a more of my vision of what I want a Star Wars to be. Maybe. Right. I don't know. I'm not gonna get too excited yet.
I mean, they're in a dire state right now, in my opinion. The Star Wars universe is in a dire state.
It's wild. You know, it's undeniable how much value the Star Wars franchise has, and nobody can seem to get at it. It's like, I can see the treasure chest right beyond the glass.
There have been some successes, and I think, you know, this Mandalorian movie coming out might do well, so we'll see.
Probably. Yeah. But I'm sure, like, Gore Verbinski is out there just, like, hanging out in his summer home being like, just waiting for that phone call, guys. Listen, you didn't like The Lone Ranger, but I made a lot of good-ass action movies. Put me back in, coach.
Anyway, well, that is a bunch of the film news that's been happening this week. We're going to take another break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats, they might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/filmcast. That's linkedin.com/filmcast to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, let's get to what we've been watching this week. Folks, for years, it was practically impossible to watch Tarsem Singh's movie, The Fall. I was rewatching the.
It's not that bad, Dave.
Well, according to you, it is. Jeff, so.
It was. I remember. Reviewed Rings of Power for Decoding TV recently, and I rewatched the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of like compare where we were at that movie compared to where we were on Rings of Power. And there's this line that Kate Blanchett says that's so profound. She's like, you know, the ring fell out of all human knowledge. You know, like she's like at one point, like the ring like falls into the water. And like, she's like, the ring fell out of all human knowledge. Like, people didn't talk about the ring. They didn't know about the ring or the rings. And that's kind of how it felt about Tarsem Singh's The Fall, because it was essentially impossible to purchase digitally. You could buy a Blu-ray, but it would cost you over $100.
It was not around for very long. I have that Blu-ray. It's great.
Oh,
yeah.
That's incredible, Devendra.
Well, it wasn't $200 when it came out. I bought it because I actually like the movie.
Yeah, that's
this
rare.
This is why you buy physical media.
100%. That's a rare item. Anyway, the only way you could actually get access to The Fall was Vudu had this thing called the Disc to Digital, mm-hmm. where you could scan a UPC copy of The Fall and then pay a couple bucks and get a digital version of it. That was the only way anyone could practically get it. So for the longest time, that was the only way to experience The Fall other than buying an expensive Blu-ray. Well, Mubi has stepped up. You know, these are the people that distributed The Substance. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, we're also going to distribute Tarsem's The Fall as well. And so they've given a 4K restoration. They did a very limited theatrical release. And I think eventually later this year, it's going to be streaming if it's not already.
It is streaming now. It's on
streaming right now. It's streaming right now on Mubi. So that is incredible that this movie that wasn't available is now available. You can pay a few bucks, have access to The Fall. I went to go see this movie at the SIFF Downtown Cinema when it was available in theaters. And I wanted to share my reaction to it. First of all, the movie continues to look incredible. This movie has some of the greatest visuals of all time. Like every 5 minutes, you're going to see a visual that is so arresting. You're going to think, oh my, that's one of the best visuals I've ever seen.
The sets, the costuming, the framing, just the sheer inventiveness of it. Yeah.
Yeah. He traveled like all around the world to some of the most visually striking locations on the planet.
Spent his own personal fortune to make that.
To capture a lot of what you see in this film. That has not changed. And the movie continues to look great. Watching it this time around, I am a little bit more sympathetic with Jeff Cannata's perspective on the movie.
Not
a perfect movie.
I have not seen this movie in a really long time. And so I had kind of like mixed to positive impressions of it when I saw it the first time. The issue for me in this movie is it's basically about the relationship between this actor dude, Lee Pace, and this girl who he meets in the hospital. And that girl, I believe, is played basically by a non-actor, Katinka Untaru.
Yeah.
And, I understand what they were trying to do with this movie, which is they wanted it to feel like, oh, you're watching, an actual friendship develop. Like, you're watching, this guy actually interact with this girl in a very naturalistic style. But it's a problem for me. She has a very thick accent. She's not like native English speaker, and she's not a trained actor. And it's just distracting because literally everything else in the movie is a different style than that.
So
I had a lot of difficulty. Also, I have to say, the movie is really sad and depressing.
It is sad. It's an incredibly sad story.
And, I didn't really remember how depressing it actually is. But I'm kind of moved. The movie is a tribute to all the people that work so hard to make the movies that we love and the movie moments that we love. That's really what I think the movie is ultimately.
It actually does relate to The Fall Guy in a weird way. Yeah,
that's right. It's actually, you could take it as a kind of prequel to The Fall Guy.
Except much sadder.
There's
much
Here
more.
And Heretic. Yeah.
That's right.
The Fall and The Fall Guy. That's how the movie titles work now.
Thank you. So I accept your apology.
This is a movie I think everyone should see just because it's such an incredible visual spectacle.
Yeah.
You want to just be like, oh, wow, I saw that movie because it's just amazing what he's able to achieve. But story-wise, acting-wise, I understand it has some really severe shortcomings.
I love the little girl in this movie, but it is because she feels so real and such like a genuine kid.
Yeah, she feels like a real kid. It feels like a documentary almost which is like really weird because everything else is super highly stylized in the movie, right? So
I was watching clips of this over at Mubi at my parents' house. And I bought my dad a 77-inch OLED a couple years ago.
Nice.
So that is their main thing. And this restoration looks incredible. The movie still looks good. I think right now people finally have TVs that can also fully kind of replicate what this movie was trying to do. Because back then you either saw it in theaters or you had a shitty little, if you had an HD TV, it was 32 inches or something, So maybe we're in a better place for people to actually appreciate some aspects of this thing now, too.
Absolutely. Well, check out The Fall. It is worth watching. And it is available on Mubi. I saw it when it was out in theaters. Devinder Hardware, hit us up with something you've watched this week.
Also on Mubi, actually. I guess Mubi, I don't know, not sponsoring us, but maybe, hey, we're available.
You should. You should, Mubi.
Yeah, you should. I saw Coralie Farge's The Substance, which is also now streaming on Mubi, and they distributed it as well. And that's a movie.
It's a movie.
Whoa. Did you not like it? Did you not like it, Devendra?
I think there are aspects of this thing that I really, really like, but this is one of those movies.
I am stunned. I thought you would love this thing.
Here's the thing. In doses, sure, yes, but this is one of those movies that starts at 11 or 15, right?
Yeah.
Just stays there.
I would argue it goes up from there. But yes.
I don't know. But I mean, 11 in terms of just intensity.
Yes.
And how like maximalist it's going.
Yeah.
And it never really lets up. And I'm just like, I get what you're doing. I see what you're doing.
Right.
It is also kind of like relentless in how the movie is just constantly assaulting you with quick cuts, super close-ups, gross camera angles, things like that. And I'm like, after a certain point, I'm like, all of this is great. You clearly have a really interesting directorial eye. It is very distracting from what you're trying to tell here.
Mm.
And I also think the actual story it's trying to tell, it's very interesting and done in a way we haven't said before or seen before. I think Demi Moore is fantastic. Margaret Qualley is incredible in this. Like, even Dennis Quaid, not somebody I think about very often, but he pulls off a really unhinged sort of like a freakish performance.
He probably has the grossest performance in the movie somehow.
Just him eating. A scene of him eating.
He's only in like 5 minutes of this movie. Yeah.
It's disgusting. I think this is a really bold film in many ways, but I also feel like it is, you got to learn to like modulate that stuff, like to really sell whatever the message is in this thing. And also I feel like I have just questions about some of the setup. We're not gonna get too into spoilers, but we know from the trailer Demi Moore's character is a famous Hollywood actress. She has a star on the Walk of Fame. The movie does this thing where it's like we see her in her fancy ass Hollywood Hills apartment, right? You see beautiful things. She's clearly very rich. Also has a very annoying neighbor dude that I'm like, how? He's not. First of all, why is she in an apartment building?
Mm-hmm.
Also, he looks like a writer who is not doing very well, like a schlubby screenwriter who is not actually very successful. Why is he in the same building? This is a movie that brings up a lot of like clashes characters together, and I always have questions about how it works. It didn't fully work with me. This movie feels like an assault on the senses in not the best ways.
Wow.
Quite often. Yeah.
Wow.
I appreciate lots of it. I appreciate I appreciate the performances. Demi Moore like is doing fantastic work here and showing herself. Like there's a lot of her just being very naked and showing her aging body. And Margaret Qualley, same thing. Except like she is the exact opposite. And it's a movie. Yeah, I admire aspects of it, but man, it's just like when you're always gunning at an extreme maximalist filmmaking style, like after a certain point, I like it, but also my favorite like maximalist directors also kind of like modulate it somehow. So I feel like this movie goes
interesting
a little too far at times. But I respect what it's going for. I just wish I liked it more.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has a fairly simple story for a 2 hour and 20 minute long film, you know,
and
like
also, yeah, there's that. It's the style of filmmaking. Also like, I see your Shining references. I see all your references to other films. And it's things like that where it's like, oh, you're not just going to do that one reference. You're going to do the reference on top of the reference. You're gonna really like layer it on. This is like a multi-layered cake that I feel like is maybe a little too sweet for me, but it sure is quite a wild ride. Yeah.
I am a fan of The Substance, big fan, would recommend it. It's streaming right now on Mubi. You know, I think it has a very simple story and a very simplistic message.
Yeah.
And what is special about this movie is the style, is that filmmaking. So it's really something that I do think you need to be on the film's wavelength. And if you're not, I can understand why it would be very overwhelming to experience. So, but yeah,
that's the word.
Is streaming right now in Mubi. It's also available in video on demand. Probably one of the, there are movies that debut throughout the year at film festivals, and then we hear about them, and then they come out in theaters, and sometimes they come out on streaming services. This one, I would say, I would argue this is like one of the ones that has actually broken through. This movie made around $47 million of the worldwide box office. That's like really good for an indie, you know, tiny film like this. So it's always fascinating. You know, you go to Sundance or Toronto International Film Festival or Cannes, and it's like, oh, it's everyone works their ass off to try to like get into the movie, right? And then like then at the end of the year, they can't get the movie out to you fast enough. They want everyone to watch the movie so they can vote on the awards and stuff. But this is one of those ones that I think really like crossed over into the mainstream. Like people know about it and have paid to see it. And I think that's wonderful. So anyway, The Substance, available right now on Mubi. I'll mention one last thing that I watched. And it looks like Devinder Harder will also watch this movie. This movie is called Will and Harper. And it is available on Netflix. Jeff, you're nodding. Have you heard about this movie or did you see it?
I've been meaning to watch it. I've been waiting to watch it with my wife because she wants to watch it too. So
perfect
I haven't
time
seen it yet,
to watch this movie, Jeff.
Very, very, very much interested in watching this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie, Will and Harper, is a documentary that's on Netflix. It's about Will Ferrell, whose longtime like best friend decides to come out as a trans woman named Harper. And they decide to you know, Harper previously really loved to go road tripping around the country and didn't know how she would do that given her new identity, and so Will Ferrell suggests this idea of like, let's go and take a road trip around the country and get to know each other better, like get to understand what this means for us and our friendship, and see what it means for you to travel around the country given this new phase of your life. And I would say this movie is very pleasant. You know, it's very nice. It's about kindness and empathy and understanding. And therefore, I think there is some value to the film. I've seen some critiques of this movie that it centers Will Ferrell's perspective. That is not a critique that I had, but I understand if people, you know, feel that way about it. But I'll just say, I think what I witnessed in this movie is just people genuinely coming together in the spirit of friendship, trying to like figure out, trying to just like honestly understand each other better, you know? And I think that is something that is sorely needed during this time. Devinder Harder, what would you think of this movie?
Yeah, I thought this movie was very, very sweet and certainly very timely too, because we're living in a time where the incoming presidential candidate is out there vilifying trans people and
well,
culturally
spent,
too.
Spent tens of millions of dollars on ads that scaremonger against trans individuals.
And clearly that entire campaign was pure scaremongering. If it was immigrants, if it was trans people, that's really all conservatives have to lean on right now, which is disgusting and also makes lives really difficult and dangerous for these people, for these vulnerable people. And I think this movie does a great job of telling Harper's story and kind of there's a lot of her perspective here too. Like Will Ferrell is the name selling this project and everything. Yeah. He is in most of the scenes, but this is Harper's story. And I think we really get a sense of who she is and kind of what was leading to her decisions and why it took her so long to even come out.
How it impacted her family. Yeah. You know, like it's really fascinating because you don't really get, sadly, you don't get this perspective that often in our media. And so
I think like as a film, I think it's important for audiences who do not have, who are not like readily exposed to actual trans people, because this is like the problem with, the LGBT community in general in the 80s and 90s is like things were really homophobic back then, casually. Yeah. The Simpsons would do it. Every show would do it, you know? It was just kind of the way things were. And then I think as people became more exposed to gay people, it became like less of a thing. And now it's definitely like frowned upon in many circles, or at least mainstream.
It's the
culture.
Other Will and project, right?
Yes.
Will and Grace is, you know, I think one hopes that culture will move forward even if government isn't. And that's what happened. I mean, those of us that are old enough, as you point out, Devendra, to recall it, you know, it was as intolerant a time as it is now, you know, for just homosexuality. And the culture just said, well, we're just going to show it to you. And we're you're going to realize that it's not scary, you know? And I think that's what happened. And then now it's like such a non-issue, you know, it still
it depends
in some
on
circles,
where, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. For most people, I think, you know, gay marriage isn't even we don't even talk about that whole election cycle. No one talked about gay marriage. Right. Whereas, you know,
I don't agree with that assessment, but you know, for most people, it's understandable. I think we're about to see, topics like that become part of the national conversation in a way that is regressive and unfortunate.
And right now, I'm just like a fan of anything that is delivering empathy and delivering kindness and the idea of understanding each other, especially people very different from you. Like, we're gonna need that. Because the driving, motivating factor right now is fear of the other, fear of losing, you know, what is yours. Yeah. That is what kind of drove this election, I think, on many fronts. So, yeah,
want to be clear, Jeff. I agree with your overall point, which is that, like, people seeing that, you know, people who are part of these groups that they don't necessarily encounter every day, like seeing them like in their normal environs and interacting with their friends and stuff like that is like a very valuable component of what art can do, I think, and help to normalize these things and make people feel more comfortable with them.
It's indisputable to say that the needle moved dramatically over the last 20, 30 years in that regard. And I think, you know, art and culture have the power to do that in this arena as well. So,
and the movie also it points out like it is kind of a growing experience for Will Ferrell too, like to understand what this means and how does his longtime friend navigate through the world. He probably has questions about this lifestyle too, or like there are things like that that I think are really compelling. I've seen criticisms of this movie that it is also, you know, early on it is misgendering Harper because he is talking about, you know, her previous identity. It is using the dead name, and that is not something people want to do in general in the trans community. So I think the movie kind of fell victim to some of that, but I don't know. I feel like I can understand why they constructed it that way, because that is maybe how a lot of people think about trans people in their lives. But I also understand the complete like aversion to even bringing up old names and things like that. So there is that part of this movie. I think overall though, it is very, very sweet. It definitely made me tear up at the end. Yeah.
I'd agree. I would recommend it. And I think, in times like these, it's something that is worth watching. So the movie is Will and Harper, and it's available right now on Netflix.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. Cargurus.com.
All right, folks, let's do a few weekly plugs. Weekly plugs is the part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. Folks, I have started making videos again. There's a long period of time where I stopped making videos, and I figured out a way to do them in a way that I can actually make them on a regular basis. And you should check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. This week, I made a video about movies that make more sense after the election. Mm-hmm. So you can see what I'm talking about there by going to youtube.com/Dave Chensky, Dave Chen, S-K-Y, and see what movies I picked. All right, Devinder Hardware, give us a weekly plug.
Yeah, I want to shout out the latest episode of the Engadget podcast. We talked about my reviews of the PlayStation 5 Pro and Apple's new M4-powered MacBook Pros and M4 Mac Mini. Last week was a hell of a week for me, guys, because I was literally writing all weekend. Like, I was just in a fugue state, just writing thousands of words to deliver these reviews, which were due, like, Wednesday and Thursday. So last week feels so surreal to me that the election happened. We lived through that. Also, I had to deal with all this shit. Go read my reviews. Go listen to the podcast episode.
To quote Connie Nielsen in the original Gladiator, mm-hmm. honor him by reading Devendra's Engadget reviews.
Give me engagement. Are you not entertained? Yes.
That's Mad Max, Jeff. Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
A movie I prefer to Gladiator.
Although very similar, actually, but
better. We'll see. I don't know, I haven't seen it in a long time. We'll see if I change my tune. Limericks. Oh, it's my opportunity to tell you about the joys of limericks. Head over to my Cameo page, cameo.com/Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two n's and one t, and you'll see all of the people who have enjoyed getting limericks. There's over 150 five-star reviews there. Folks who really have enjoyed some whimsy from yours truly. Boy, what a time to have a little whimsy in the form of a five-line poem I can compose specifically for you or your loved one based on the criteria you provide and then deliver via video. Cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. Do it.
I, of course, want to throw a shout out for our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes and exclusive After Darks. We never want you to donate if it in any way causes you financial hardship. You can always support us for free by leaving a review for us on Apple Podcasts or a star rating, or share one of our videos. We're on YouTube, we're on Instagram. Share a video for us. That would really help us out as well. Thanks to everyone who makes this podcast possible. All right, let's get to our review of Heretic.
Hi, good afternoon, ma'am.
Are you interested in learning about our Savior, Jesus Christ?
Good afternoon.
Hi, are you?
My name is Sister Barnes, and
oh my gosh.
Are you interested in learning more about the Church of Jesus Christ?
Come on in.
We can't come inside unless another woman is present.
My wife is home. Does that come?
Great.
You like pie?
Yeah.
My wife has pie in the oven.
I could tell that you are a very spiritually curious person.
I think it is good to be religious. To find your faith in a doctrine you actually believe.
Well, our work here is done.
I will go and check on the pie. So sleep, silent
angel. Welcome to the Filmcast review of Heretic, which is available right now in theaters. I'm going to read the plot summary from the internet. Two young missionaries become ensnared in a deadly game of cat and mouse when they knock on the door of the diabolical Mr. Reed. End quote. All right, Devendra Hardware, let's start with you. What did you think of Heretic?
Oh, I love this movie. Like, I think it is a really interesting bit of psychological horror that taps into something I'm deeply interested in. I was one of those people in college who would spend a lot of time talking with people who were religious and just trying to figure out like what they were thinking and what kind of motivated them since high school. I think I was firmly on the like agnostic atheist stance. The more I read, the more I was just like this. We have just told ourselves stories, right? We've all told ourselves stories. These things have existed as sort of systems of control. And this movie really taps into that. And then it goes a little too far. You know, this is one of those movies where I'm like, really, I am actually really in line with what you're saying, Hugh Grant. But then you go too far, like Mr. Richard Dawkins or something. You know, the atheist movement have had their share of assholes, too. Not to this extent. But no, I think this movie is really well constructed. I love that it is so dialogue rich. It is such a battle of ideas, and is less flashy than I expected, judging from the trailer. Like, there are horror movie elements to it, but just a sheer level of ideas and dialogue and character work kind of going on in those scenes too, that I just really, really appreciated. Also really funny to see Hugh Grant in a role like this too. I think we normally have always associated him with like the handsome rom-com guy, or like the funny guy, like in the Paddington movies too. Like, he really acquits himself really well there. There have been a lot of stories about him just as a person, you know, as a person, as an actor, like what an asshole he could be to other people. And it's really interesting seeing this role kind of with that lens too. I think he is fantastic here though. Like,
he's in this whole phase of his career now, Hugh Grant, is where he is playing bad guys.
Yeah.
And he's really leaning into his evolving looks in a way that I really appreciate. Because you're right. When we were growing up, he was kind of heartthrob status, you know, Notting Hill and all those.
All the others.
All the other movies that don't come to mind right now. But now he's like, hey, I realize like the face that I have has so many features. Four Weddings and a Funeral. That's the other big one.
I've just noticed stuff about my face.
Yeah, and it's like, this can be deployed in the service of creating a really threatening presence. And he's really doing that with movies like, I think he was
like
the bad
Paddington
guy in
2.
Dungeons and Dragons. Paddington 2, Dungeons and Dragons. Also,
some Guy Ritchie stuff that he's like.
The Gentleman, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So
The screening that I went to of Heretic had a Q&A with him afterwards.
Oh, wow.
And he explicitly
in person? You saw him in person?
Well, he was in person at a location that was beamed to me.
Got it.
He was at a Alamo Draft House in, I think, Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn,
and it was beamed to the Alamo Draft House that I was sitting in Denver. But he specifically spoke to this point, and he said that Four Weddings and a Funeral kind of shot him in a trajectory that he never intended and didn't really want. But he said, you sort of roll with where where your bread is buttered. That's where you go, you know, like that's where they were. That's the parts that were being offered. And that's, I wanted work. And so that's where I went. But he said he always preferred playing the bad guy. Like, that's what he would want to do. And his first few roles as a young actor were like more of that kind of character-y, darker thing. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of went off for a few decades on this wild trajectory because of one.
He was cursed with being handsome, incredibly handsome.
I don't think he talked about it as a curse necessarily, or as something that,
right.
You know, he's like, hey, I'm, you know, he wasn't suffering through those roles, but he was just sort of as surprised as anybody else that that's where his, and he's like, but now that he has the opportunity to sort of, you know, circle or back to the darker stuff, he really enjoys doing it.
He can embrace his true nature now. Yeah.
yes.
But anyway, Devendra loved Heretic. Jeff Cannata, curious what you thought about Heretic.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought about Heretic is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
Religion as fodder for fear is accomplished so artfully here. And it was a blessing how it kept me guessing. Hugh Grant made the menace sincere. I also love this movie. Oh, this movie's awesome. I mean, it's my catnip, right? It's just people sitting in a room talking. But Devendra's so right that it is thrilling, this battle of ideas. And I love stuff like this. It is TED Talk, the horror movie. But I love that.
Great concept, by the way. I don't think anybody's done that yet. Save that, Jeff. Save that. That's your screenplay. Yeah.
Dang it. Did I just reveal my... Yeah. I couldn't help but compare Hugh Grant's performance here to Nicolas Cage's performance in Long Legs, where he's trying so hard to make it scary. And, like, what is so much more menacing, what is so much more creepy and gets under my skin, I'm only talking about me personally, is normalcy.
Yeah.
That is, there's something wrong under the surface. Right.
Absolutely.
You can put on all the prosthetics and you can make the funny voice and you can do the odd thing. And there's a place for that. And like, I think it's kind of wacky and fun what Nicolas Cage did. Was it scary? For me, at no point was Nicolas Cage scary in Long Legs. At no point. Hugh Grant in this role is immediately off. Something is wrong, and you know it immediately. Mm-hmm. But he's the nicest guy in the world. And I loved that. Like, there's something so powerful about that, I think, and uncommon. Like, you don't see that a lot in film. Like, more often, if we're trying to scare you, we're going to go to that weird place. And I love that this movie mines all of that horror and terror and foreboding from something that is absolutely benign on the surface. Now, I also agree with Devendra. It is wild to see what is undeniably from the word go a villainous character saying all the things that I think. It is a wild experience to sit there and be like, I've heard nothing I disagree with yet. but I mean, this movie goes places. I had fun where it goes. I love, you know, we'll get into it in spoilers, but I really had a blast with this movie. It is just so cool. The dialogue is so great. You have awesome actors. I think the two women in this movie, should not go underappreciated as well, because they have a very difficult job. Actually, Hugh Grant mentioned this in that little Q&A as well. He's like, they have to start, they're like 10 minutes into this movie, they have to be scared and they have to stay scared for the next hour and a half.
Right.
And it's like, that's a hard job. That's a hard job to maintain that and not let it be exhausting for the audience and sort of tiresome and uninteresting. And they are really, really great, I think. And
I agree. And we should say Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East are the actors' names.
Thank you. And I believe they are actual Mormons, playing Mormons. And so they come from this sort of place of it being deep-seated in their identity and their history and their upbringing. And I think that there's a sort of dignity that they bring to it that is interesting. I really am enamored with this movie. I think this is one of the coolest horror movies I've seen in years. I love Hugh Grant in it. I love that it really gives him stuff to say that makes you think. Like, this is one of those horror movies that at least for me, it gives me fodder to actually leave the theater and chew on. And but it also accomplishes the sort of pure visceral thing you want out of a thriller, where I'm on the edge of my seat throughout. And I'm, like I said, in the limerick, guessing where it's going and trying to figure it out. And it surprised me a number of times. I think this movie's a home run.
Just to clarify, by the way, I believe they were both raised Mormon, unclear if they still are today. But they had Mormon upbringing.
Grew up Mormon.
Oh, guys.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, guys.
Not some Mechasy enough for you?
All right. So here's what I like about this movie. I like that it actually is about, like, big ideas. And it's kind of, like, here's the thing. I feel like I've seen so many of these movies this year of, like, spooky guy terrifies women or women in a house. There was, like, kind of a similar sequence like this movie in the movie Oddity. Speak No Evil kind of has similar vibes to this as well. So I feel like I've, like, seen this movie. And this movie,
Speak No Evil, is more the sort of, like, manners, right? The culture of manners we have.
How we will just
go along with things.
And there, and to be fair, that was about a family, not just women.
Yes, yes.
But anyway, I feel like I've kind of seen this kind of movie before, and it's interesting that this movie actually injects, like, these big ideas into it about religion and faith and belief and so on. And like, the movie gets a ton of credit for that alone. Like, just, hey, this is an interesting spin on this kind of, like, trapped in a house genre of movie. I think it's thought provoking in that way. It's also about board games. I think the first, like, I loved the first 40 minutes of this movie. Like, I thought it was, like, wow. The way it kind of ratchets up the tension, and there's just, as you said, Jeff, something a little bit off about Hugh Grant. You can't pin it down, and the way that that slowly reveals itself. Was not a fan of the final act of the film, and we can get into why that is the case. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm very mixed to positive on Heretic. I think, again, just the fact that it's doing something new and interesting, and there's some really well-directed horror sequences that are like tense and uncomfortable, that makes this movie kind of worth watching. And then the movie really kind of falls apart at the end for me, for reasons I'll get into. So those are my overall thoughts.
For interesting reasons. And sure. Maybe has to do with the way we discuss religion. The way religion, you know.
No, yeah. I think it's for much simpler reasons than that.
Maybe. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah. So Jeff and Dindra, both huge fans. I liked it, but I'm much more mixed on it. So those are our overall thoughts on Heretic. But guys, let's talk about spoilers for this movie starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
All right. I think the big issues I have with this movie are kind of narrative contrivances, mm-hmm. Specifically, you know, my wife put it very astutely, which is she was very frustrated by this film because for the first part of the movie, she found it to be quite tedious. And like, you're so far ahead of the characters, right? Like, you know, the dude is creepy. You're like, get the F out of there. And it takes them so long to like figure out that they're in danger. In my
I don't
opinion.
Think that's true. I think they figure out they're in danger pretty darn fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right, I think. Well, I'm just saying they are in that awkward place of not knowing what to do about it. But I think they are like on the tip of like, there's no wife here. Pretty quick.
That's fair, Jeff. I guess. I guess that's more of a commentary of how my wife and I would just have been like getting the F out of there like 30 seconds in. Like, probably wouldn't have even stepped foot in the door. Like, I'm physically laying eyes on the wife before I am stepping into this door. You know, like, and so maybe that's what we're complaining. It's like, but you're right. You're probably what you're saying is fair. But then to go from that to then being like behind the characters, like by the end of the movie, specifically Sister Paxton, right? Who Chloe East character seemingly gets like a personality transplant at the end of the movie. And I understand there are some pleasures in a movie for like, oh, the person who you thought wasn't going to be the cunning one actually turned out to be the one that's super smart. And it's like, okay, like I'm not opposed to that, but like it has to be like set up and built up to. A really good example of this, I would say, is remember that movie You're Next, the Adam Wingard movie?
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that like this house is being terrorized by these people, and then this woman in the movie, she grew up in like a survivalist compound, and she's like a complete badass. And like the way that her expertise like reveals itself over time is very satisfying, in my opinion. Here in this movie, it's just like, oh, actually, she just figured everything out, and also like she's not like a wilting flower like you thought she was, and it just feels.
I think
not particularly satisfying to me. Anyway,
That's a fair criticism. My interpretation was more that she was tested in a way she had never been before and passed the test, right?
Yeah.
Like there is no way to set up her ability to do that because she has never been put in a situation where she had to find out if she could do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that is established is that these are two very clever girls.
Yes.
Like they're very smart. And I love a movie that is confident enough to give you smart main characters when so much of what is required for them to be in danger is dumb stuff, you know, like doing the not smart or suboptimal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at every step of the way, they're pretty smart. You know, they're thinking, they're planning, they're like, you know, they figure out things throughout. And I think for me, getting to the point where she sort of like transcends her mousy nature worked because she's in this pressure cooker where it's like, either do that or you're dead. So yeah. She has to do that. And it's like, I found it to be very, as you kind of indicated, I found it to be really exciting. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, she did it. She did it. You know?
Yeah. 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 It's hard to say, like, it's hard to put the finger on like what exactly would have made that work better. Right. Like, I think the thing that really, like, I am totally sympathetic to that as an arc for a character. I think the thing that really was odd to me was, like, her personality seems to have been completely different by the end. And I know you can, like, something like this can, like, change a person. I get that. Yeah, but, like,
I suspect all of our personalities would be slightly different,
like,
in this.
But there's, like, no trace of, like, the character that we saw before by the end of the movie. And that's kind of, like, that was just odd to me as a creative decision. So, anyway. I also think Hugh Grant's plan is like super elaborate, you know,
well, yeah.
It's one of those, but anyway,
that's the movie.
Yeah.
That's he gets a little too overboard with it.
That's his kink.
Yeah. I do want to say,
it reminded me of, it's like one of like Penn and Teller's things. Teller, the magician, you know, one of his like secrets to being a magician is like always, you know, one of the secrets to being a good magician is that often the magic trick is you put more work into it than people would think you should.
Right? Yeah, right.
And so I thought about that when Sister Paxton is like recounting what he did and you switch the body out for another body. And it's like, who would actually go to that much work? And it's like this guy, you know, this guy.
Well, I think that's his whole point is think about the ways in which these institutions are willing to present a false narrative to you to assert control, like the lengths they are willing to go to ensure that their doctrine is not questioned. I don't know.
Yeah, they have like massive meetings and shit where they like align on like, actually what we said before that doesn't make sense anymore. It's the new thing now. You know, like, that stuff happens all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Conclaves and such. Anyway, go ahead.
I do think it ultimately comes down to like, this ends up being a really interesting debate of ideas and everything. But every religious debate ends in violence. Like that's ultimately that's how we wrap up this story. Who's more violent than the other? Mm. Like, this is not really a battle of the ideas, but it's about who can, you know, stab each other in the head fastest or more surprisingly.
Right. Yeah.
It does come out of nowhere, but I'm also like, that checks out. Actually does check out a lot.
I was a little bit, I was like, is this going to be a movie where like he never actually lays a hand on any of these people?
Cause that would be
like,
interesting.
That would be like really interesting and clever. And then of course the movie like abandons that by the end as
I agree. I agree 100% with that. I was a little, if I had any disappointment in this movie, it's that it becomes a movie.
Yeah, it becomes like very conventional by the end.
It becomes now we're a horror movie. And
right
now we're
to like Sister, what's her name? Sister Barnes, like coming back to life and hitting him on the head. She's just been chilling the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
That part was very, I did not like
I
that
did
at all.
Think, yeah. I thought the point is much more powerful.
Yeah.
If the women hadn't been in cages.
Yeah.
Right? Which is making an ancillary point that is also powerful. But
I know writers who use subtext. I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards, FYI. So.
right. The notion that, you know, that he's trying to put forth throughout the movie, which is like, you chose this, you're here of your own accord. You know, you all along the way, you made every choice that led you here. You know, I think that all that stuff is so awesome. And then by the end, it's like, well, ladies in cages, you are being starved to death. It's like, well, you're undermining your own point, which is also sort of the point of the movie is that he's undermining his own point. But I think it would have been cool if it had even cooler if it had been consistent throughout and managed to still.
Jeff, fortunately, I can't conceive of an actual situation where one of the worst internet commenters of all time convinces women that it's their idea for him to control their bodies. You know, like
get them to make the decision, active choice.
I give him
power.
Yeah. I mean, that's just
never happen. It will never happen.
The movie is so unbelievable in that way that it's like, you know,
yes.
Any women, fantasy.
Given the choice, a free and unfettered choice to
surely. Surely, A majority of white women would not make that decision.
Our kindness anyway. Culture makes this possible. Watching this movie made me think of Resurrection, by the way, a movie which really sticks in my head. And Tim Roth, remember Tim Roth is in that movie?
Yeah.
Doesn't actually lay a hand on Rebecca Hall. Yeah. It's all idea control and referencing things that happened in the past. Sure, but
that movie is creepy as fuck.
So creepy, so menacing, just by his sheer, like, the way he kind of postured himself and the way he, like, controlled her with ideas.
Yeah.
This movie, I would have loved for Hugh Grant to kind of lean into that a little more before we got to the stabby stabby. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Heretic, guys? I agree with you that, like, it sounds like we have similar thoughts on the ending, which felt very conventional to me in not a good way. But a lot of stuff that came before is like, oh, hey, we're actually talking about some big ideas here. And that's kind of nice. You know,
people are debating, like, did she actually get out? Like, is it other girl just appearing out of nowhere? Or is that a dream sequence after she dies or something? Like, we don't.
And then she sees the butterfly at the end too. And I will say it's kind of silly that, like, my understanding, like, I didn't even clock this the first time, but my wife's like, the way she gets out is by seeing in the model that there is a vent in the wall, right? It was just like, okay.
He built the model to such perfect scale.
Such
that she, This I thought was kind of cool.
I guess.
There's some cool visual stuff with the model and how, I mean,
There's that scene where she's like, she's trying to get out of the basement, and then it, like, shows you that she's in the model. That was kind of cool. I like that.
So rad.
I like that. Yeah. But.
Yeah. There's so much this movie does. I don't fault it much for kind of getting back on rails a bit by the end because it's, I don't know. I like, that's okay. Like, you could still deliver the movie that people want to see, but you have this kind of, you know, that's the sugar that makes the medicine of the big ideas go down, I think, is, I think I love that it has these sort of unconventional heroes too, that don't usually get their time in the sun. You know, I'm not big on organized religion, but I just still think it's cool that these are not the characters that you usually elevate to leading character status, you know? And I thought that was interesting and unconventional. There's just so much fun, smart stuff that goes on.
There's a lot to chew on in this movie. I kind of really dig that.
Yeah. Let me highlight a few, like, fun moments from the movie that I really appreciated. So I thought when it's first revealed that the candle is blueberry pie, like, that's a nice moment because you kind of know it's coming and then it happens, right?
So can I tell you a quick little thing, because I
talked you went about to this the smell-o-vision, right?
I talked about this in the afterlife. I had a special screening, obviously. I've mentioned that Hugh Grant thing happened afterwards, but it was at the Alamo Draft House, so Alamo serves food. I talked about this in the After Dark, so forgive me, patrons, for being repeating myself, but they pumped in the smell of the blueberry pie, and then we actually learned, I didn't know this going in, but it wasn't just smell. They actually served us, everybody in the theater. It was a press screening, but they served all of us blueberry pie in the middle of the movie, because it's Alamo Draft House. You can serve food in the middle of the movie in that theater, which is probably why they chose Alamo Draft House, so they could do that. But it was a wild moment for me, because we are eating the pie at the exact moment that we find out there is no pie. They served us pie.
The pie is a lie.
The pie is a lie. I thought that was very funny.
I like Hugh Grant's contraption for locking his front door. I thought that was cool. They never really explained.
You're like taking notes.
Yeah,
could be useful actually over the next couple of years.
That was my favorite, like, dialogue interaction, was when he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, like, my front door is locked and I can't unlock it." And, you know, Sister Barnes is like, "Well, that's pretty unusual, don't you think, to have a front?" He's like, "Yeah, I know, but what are you gonna do?" You know, like, they have this whole, like, conversation, and I was just like,
"You can just go out the back. You can just go out the back." It's like, why wouldn't your back door have a lock on it?
Yeah, it's
creepo.
And the whole time when they're, like, negotiating what to say and what not to say, like, again, I love the first,
it's awesome
45. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the first half to third of this movie is just like them negotiating what to say, what not to say. You're in this, like, upsetting situation. You don't know what to do.
The part where they find the key in the wrong pocket. the bike lock key has been put in the other girl's pocket.
Yeah.
Just an awesome, like, the realization that, well, the key has been taken out of one pocket and put in a different pocket. What does that mean? That means he probably unlocked our bike, like all of that. It's so
rad. There's a nice big head fake when Topher Grace, wearing like really bad white hair, shows up and he's like, I have one question for you. And you think he's going to bring up the bikes.
Yeah.
And that's like a nice moment where like,
yeah,
the movie is like, that doesn't say it, but it like, it knows you're thinking about the bikes.
Yeah.
And then like later it pulls back to reveal the bikes are gone. And that's like a great, you know, there's some great stuff in the movie.
Great,
you know,
stuff.
I'm not saying the movie's bad. But yeah, the ending definitely left something to be desired.
I do like the explorations of how culture reuses things, how ideas get reused. Like that's, and then that kind of unlocks why that song is in the trailer too. Because I remember seeing this trailer first time. I'm like, that sounds like creep.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's such an awesome moment. And like the discordant sort of poppy music to this dark conversation, and it's sort of like too loud, which is kind of disorienting in its own way. And, you know, he's doing all the stuff with the versions of the board game. And then it's just so awesome. So awesome. Love it.
Yeah. One of my favorite touches from the movie is Hugh Grant often drinks from a cup that says hubby on it. And so there's a mug. And then later on, I think he has like a thermos. So he really decked out he wanted to go for the full illusion.
Yeah.
Of being a husband, which I thought was also...
Ladies, why is this guy single?
Yeah.
The only other thing that the movie doesn't account for at all is like, it sure seems like there's been a lot of missing persons in this area recently.
Yeah.
You know, like if he's got cages full of people in his basement, it feels like maybe we would be aware that there's been missing people. You know,
right? Like they keep sending these missionaries. Like for some reason, whenever we send a Mormon missionary to this guy's house, we never see them again.
Well, I didn't
try this time.
I didn't get the impression that these were all Mormon missionaries in cages. I feel like he's just gotten to Mormonism today, you know. But he's been doing it with.
So some of them are Jehovah's Witnesses.
Exactly.
And some of them are Protestants, you know, and so on. Right.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Anyway. Heretic, good stuff in the movie.
Good movie.
A movie that all of us enjoyed to some degree or the other. At the end of the day, it is really impressive that Scott Beck and Brian Woods made a movie. All right, folks, that's going to bring us into this week's episode of the podcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper comes from Noah Ross, who also did our weekly plugs music and edited this episode. Video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's not going to be our 800th episode. It's going to
be.
Why would it be? It's going to be an episode in which we are going to be discussing the 2000 Ridley Scott film Gladiator in preparation for our review of Gladiator.
I think you should label it 799 and a half.
Maybe. We'll see. Until then.
Part one. 800 part one.
Dead Reckoning.
Yeah.